This call is now being recorded.
Thank you, Natalie. Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. On today's RAP call, we have Faisal Shah, Greg Aaron, George Kirikos, Barry Cobb, Jeff Newman, Michael Connor, James Bladel, Roland Perry, Rod Rasmussen. From staff, we have Margie Milam, Glenda Saint-Géry, Gisela Gruber-White, myself, and we have apologies from Frederick Fellman. Thank you.
Okay, Mikey, I know you'll be dropping off a few minutes early. Thank you for your note. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. In our last action-packed episode, we were talking about who is. And in last call, we had reached what seemed to be unanimous consensus on not trying to get deeply into who is questions. But then Mike Rodenbaugh suggested carving out an exception because he wanted to look at proxy contact information issues. I was going to give him the floor to talk about his interests, but he is not on the call, at least not yet. I had also left that issue open on the list for other people to weigh in. Had a couple of people agree, like Paul Stohura, and then Bo Brendler and Roland Perry said that they did want to discuss who is issues, although it was unclear from their posts whether they wanted to just look at proxy stuff like Mike, or if they wanted to be more expansive than that and look at additional issues. So at the moment, I have alternative views of some sort from Mike, Bo, and Roland, and then a group had supported not getting deeply into who is. And that group included James, Barry, Phil, Corwin, Fred, Jeremy, George, Mikey, Gretchen, Rod, Faisal, Paul Stohura, Andy Steingrubel, Martin Sutton, and myself. So that is where we seem to be at the moment. Those with alternative, let's see, I don't think we have Mike or Bo or Roland on the call today.
We've got Roland.
Wait, I'm sorry. Roland, you are with us. Roland, would you like to speak about your views?
Yeah, okay. Actually, I've just spent the last couple of hours listening to the MP3 of the last meeting, and that's given me a little bit more clarity about what was you were discussing and what positions people were putting forward. I think really I'm just saying that I don't think we should rule out some kind of discussion of who is, particularly as it appears to have been established that there is no other currently active group looking at who is, and therefore maybe I'm not saying we should look deeply into it, but we should at least categorise some of the issues arising from who is, such as false details and abuse of proxy services. So whether that is strong enough to veto that note that I think you were trying to send to the GNSO Council, I'm not sure. It's all getting a bit too convoluted for me, I'm afraid.
Okay. James, I see your hand.
Yes, and I'd like to point out, I think maybe perhaps Margie and Gisela can weigh in on this, but there are some efforts. I don't know if I would characterize them as active groups, but there are some efforts underway to study and collect data on who is accuracy and the popularity or prevalence, maybe not tied to abuse, but the popularity or prevalence of proxy services. So I just felt overall that there's some data gathering efforts going on that perhaps could better inform this discussion.
Okay. Thank you. George?
I'd just like to restate the position I've put on the mailing list, namely that the issue of proxies, who is, was that some registrars weren't divulging the who is upon reasonable evidence of abuse. At least that's what Mike Rodenbaugh had posted, which is really not of any significance, because if a registrar is not providing the information, then they basically take responsibility for themselves because they're not availing themselves of the safe harbor. So whether they avail themselves of the safe harbor or not doesn't eliminate anybody from responsibility. That was my main point. So if that was the justification for opening up who is, then it's not really a valid concern in my view.
Okay. Roland, I sent out some notes about kind of the history of who is discussions at the GNSO, and where we are right now is there were two groups previously. One was basically a task force, which was, I guess, an old term for a working group. 2006 and 2007, I guess, if my recollection serves correctly. And they weren't able to come to any consensus on the various issues they discussed. So then the GNSO formed a hypothesis group, which came up with a list of issues and questions on all kinds of WHOIS topics, including inaccuracy, use of proxy contacts, and so on. And that's available on the GNSO website. And then that group, then what the council decided to do is the council chose six of those questions that group came up with and asked that the staff perform studies of those. Three of those questions were about proxy, who as others were about inaccuracy and so forth. So the ICANN staff has been in the process of commissioning those studies and doing RFPs for them. One of the reasons they're doing these studies is the council asked that actual data be put together because they felt, I think, that some reliable data was going to be required in order to really consider these issues. I think one of the issues that the task force came up with against is they didn't have good data to discuss. So that's why there is no group looking at WHOIS per se, but there is that significant effort going on those six study questions. So that's why some folks are interested in letting those studies take place so there is data to look at. And in the meantime, we can go look at all the other issues that we have on our plate. So that's basically, I think, where we are. Anybody want to add to that or rebut?
Greg, it's Margie.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's the status of the surveys, and that's efforts being led by Liz Gaster on staff. I believe there's two other things going on within the GNSO, one relating to the technical aspects of WHOIS. So I believe that staff has been asked to look into issues related to IRIS or CRISP, the technical aspects of displaying WHOIS. And then I believe there's also I'll have to confirm this, but there's another effort underway to look at IDN WHOIS. So, but those are, again, not related. Neither of those efforts are related to abuse.
Yeah, the IDN issue has come up in the SAC and the GNSO. One of the issues that they've pointed to is abuse related, actually, because if you have WHOIS data that people basically can't read, then you don't know who to call if there's a problem. That was something the SAC pointed out. So I think one of the things they're going to look at is what kinds of information you should provide, but also in what formats. So that's one question underway. I don't know if there's a scheduled date for the delivery of those. I haven't seen one for any of these six studies that the GNSO is doing. Margie, do you know anything about those?
No, I just wanted to confirm that that's my understanding as well, that there's no scheduled delivery date.
Okay. I know Liz is working on them. And I know that she's working on RFPs. And they're breaking them up into two groups. They've broken them into two groups. That's all I know at this point. They're going to be funded, so they're doing scoping of the costs.
Yeah, that's right. They're not even actually going underway. They're just trying to determine the cost of those studies before they'll proceed. So it's a bit of ways on those. There's also a compliance effort underway, and I think Stacey Burnett may have given a presentation at the last ICANN meeting, but the compliance group is also independently doing some WHOIS-related studies, and I can get some information to you to the group from them if that would be helpful.
That would be great. I saw a little bit of it. Khalil Rashid was giving a presentation in Sydney.
Okay.
Did anybody happen to see that one?
Yeah, this is James. I attended that session.
What was being covered? Do you remember?
And I forget the name of the actual outside consultant, but it was a presentation by compliance and the group that's been contracted to, I think it's Opinion Research. Does that sound familiar? Anyway,
yeah, the initials, I believe, are NORC. So, Opinion
yes.
Research. Yeah, the National Opinion Research something. Right.
Yes. And we went through some of the boundary conditions of what they were looking for, and they were talking about, for example, their sampling methods, what would be treated as an accurate versus an inaccurate record, and looks like George has posted a link. That's what I was looking for. Thank you, George.
No problem.
To the chat room, but there was some discussion about privacy and proxy services as well. However, more in the context of whether a private registration would be treated as accurate for the purposes of this study, and I believe that we all agreed that that was the case. So it was an interesting presentation, and I think that there are some potential for follow-on studies as well. So there's this is just one other effort out there to collect data on this issue so that we don't necessarily get bogged down into the traditional WHOIS issues.
Okay, great. So that's where we are. I think the question for this group is, the GNSO working group guidelines don't actually address questions like the one in front of us, which is, if there's not complete agreement amongst everybody about what should we do, I mean, what do? Do you take a vote? Do you go with majority or not? I mean, obviously, when possible, we're supposed to reach consensus. So what I am going to do is I am going to send that note up to the council. And I will phrase things as we took a straw poll, which is a little more informal than, a vote. But, again, I have that list of people that I went over on the call. Currently, I have alternate views from Mike and Bo.
Transfer. I am sorry. That's not a valid extension. Please try again.
Are you still there, everyone?
George here. I'm fine.
Yeah.
Okay,
yep.
I'm not sure what happened there. Margie, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Not sure what happened there. Anyway, Roland, are you still interested in looking at WHOIS issues in the group?
Well, I think I am in a sense, because I still believe that there is a potential abuse at the point of registration if you supply WHOIS details which are patently wrong. say, for example, sort of my Mickey Mouse example. I'm also, although I know it's it is a slightly separate subject, I am concerned about registrations which are done using a proxy service where the proxy service has no, I will call it, sensible way to get the data. In other words, the proxy service says, sue me. And I don't think that I, as somebody who is has been abused, and in fact I've got a live case on this at the moment, someone's posted up some highly libelous material on a website, I would like to put a takedown notice on the website operator. However, I cannot contact them because their details are hiding behind a proxy service who won't reveal who they are. I don't particularly want to have to go to court and either sue the proxy service or somebody else. I don't know quite who else I'd sue. So I think there ought to be somewhere we ought to have some kind of benchmark of a proxy service which isn't an entirely 100% anonymizing unless you take them to court service. And I do feel quite strongly that people who hide their details that much are probably doing it abusively.
Okay. Barry?
Yeah, this is Barry Cobb. I just want to say real quick, I think there's two different kinds of things going on. Greg, when you talk about the straw poll that we took two meetings ago or almost a month ago, that was, I don't need, that vote was, I need to go back and listen to the recordings to get the details of it, but I don't believe that that straw poll that was taken and that, you know, we had such a kind of a landslide decision on one side, that wasn't to remove who is discussion, off, move it off the table altogether. We were still going to bring up those specific types of abuses where who is used in that case, like Roland had just mentioned to us. I would definitely believe those are still a part of this discussion. I thought that our straw poll was more or less to gain clarity as to whether we need to bring in the full world of who is or not. So I don't, correct me somebody if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that it's we're moving down the path where we just want to take it off the table completely.
The language that we discussed was as follows. We would leave who is off the list of registration abuses for major examination, research and recommendation making, but would also include examples and background in our report when who is issues are a factor in other abuse issues.
Right. So in the case of a proxy, as an example, you know, that should be, you know, a valid discussion, maybe a paragraph or two in our final report, or, you know, whatever our outcome is, right?
Yeah, we're not saying we don't ever mention who is, but we were saying we don't try to delve deeply into those issues that have come up before in the GNSO and are being done in these study questions and so forth. You know.
Okay. All right.
So, you know, who is a factor in stuff, but we weren't going to take on who is issues head on. That was the discussion. So anyway, that looks like where we are right now. And also, I think what we saw happen is something that happens in probably in every working group, which is we think we've gotten to a place where we're comfortable. And then we need to revisit the issue. That inevitably happens. I mean, that's okay. So that's where we are. The question will go up to the council of, you know, what advice can you give us? We, you know, this is the way we're leaning. Do we need to modify our charter? What, and so forth. So this is going to be a request. It's first letting them know kind of where things are, that we've discussed this issue, and then the question is, how are we going to, you know, move forward? We don't have unanimous consensus on this issue, and should we change our charter, or do they have any other advice? And then in the meantime, we're letting them know that we're looking at all these other issues. So, Mikey, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I took it down. Barry covered the point that I was going to make, but just to add a little emphasis, and maybe this is enough to address Roland's concern. It was also my impression that we would go ahead and talk about who is and go ahead and categorize those and include them in the report. And I guess just to close this off, maybe circle back to Roland to check and see if that's sufficient. Because I certainly wouldn't want to just completely take it off the table. But I'm pretty much repeating points that have already been made.
That was slightly different, Mikey, from my understanding, because I didn't think we were going to try to categorize all the who is issues. Because I think, hasn't that hypothesis study group already done that?
I probably worded it wrong. You know, I think our wording was that we would include who is issues as they bear on our topic, but not try and cover them all. Because, you know, I think Roland's point is valid. There is registration abuse that involves who is, and we need to acknowledge that. We just don't need to cover all the other stuff.
Right. And what the group is also saying is that this is not a statement about how any of us, the validity or invalidity of these who is issues. It's mainly about whether we how deeply or whether we get into these issues in this group. This is mainly a question for me about, is this group the right place to do this who is work?
Yeah, and I think that at least the view that I thought we were taking was, no, we shouldn't. We certainly shouldn't take on the job of trying to resolve these, but at the same time, we wanted to acknowledge them and document them as they were relevant to what we're working on.
Right, Faisal?
Yeah, that was my understanding as well, and I really think that we shouldn't be dismissing who is completely. The other thing I wanted to talk about is this issue as to whether we should actually include proxy registration as an exception within the letter as something we will be discussing. Should we be doing that as opposed to saying we're not going to be discussing who is until the studies come out? I mean, I don't even know. It sounds to me like we don't even know when those studies are going to be done. And, I mean, it could be, you know, 2 years before we even know what's going on. And then at that point, maybe it's a moot issue. So I guess the issue is whether we could can we make some exceptions within the letter itself as to some stuff that we will be discussing?
Well, it's not for me to say. I mean, this is also a question for everyone about how long do you want this group to go? Or, you know, how much time do you want to spend on it? That's a question in front of the group.
Well, I don't know if, I mean, I'm not saying that we should be doing a deep dive. There's no question about that, and I don't think, I mean, I agree with Mike that we shouldn't be trying to resolve all the issues, but there are certain things that we should be discussing. And it sounds to me like there's some people in the group that would just rather not discuss it at all, and others that would like to discuss it, but maybe not take such an in-depth, do an in-depth analysis. Certainly, it would seem that proxy registration would be something we would want to discuss. And I guess my concern is that, you know, Mike Rodenbaugh is not on the call along with some other key players, and maybe it's something we need to discuss having him on the call as well.
Yeah, he was planning on being here when I checked. But James, I see your hand up.
Yeah, just real briefly, and I apologize if I'm a little behind on this, but you were asking where do we go from here, or, you know, what does this mean in terms of the letter? I'm thinking that there may be a way to include what was already captured in the letter, but also add some language that captures the the concerns about, leaving who is off the table as an issue and what might be missed. And perhaps if Roland or Mikey or someone who still wants to see some of these issues included, that we could ask them to come up with a few sentences as to why they think it should be included.
This is Mikey. I think the letter as it stands already has that.
Okay.
I was really just trying to clarify my understanding of the sense of the letter.
Well, it didn't sound like it met everyone's satisfaction, though, Mikey, so that's why.
Yeah. Well, I think that what triggered it was, and it is too bad that Rodebaugh's not on the call, is the discussion on the list about proxy. And, I didn't pay a lot of attention because I don't know quite how to handle that. If indeed the sense of the letter is that we're going to remove who is from our discussion entirely, then I don't support the letter. But as the letter stands right now, that's not the way I understood it was worded.
Sounds like I'm going to need to send out a new version of the letter and ask for one more round of comment. Because Mike and Bo aren't on the call. And everybody else can take one more look at it. And then, in the meantime, we can move on. How's that sound? And then if folks want to propose some additional language for the letter, that's fine. I'll send up a new draft.
This is Mikey. That's fine with me.
Okay. All right. So that's what we'll do with who is. Next thing on our agenda is an update from our cyber squatting group. Fred gave apologies today. Mike Runbaugh is not on the call. Michael Young is not on the call. Paul Stoher is not on the call. Bill Corwin is not on the call. But James Bladel is.
So I knew this was going to land on my lap. So this is an update. Mike R. has posted a definition of cyber squatting as it reads as part of the ACPA, and posted that over the weekend, and I had a chance to briefly review it. I posted a couple of response questions, but to be honest, Greg, that's kind of where we left it as of this morning.
Okay. And I saw one person, Michael Young, said he wanted to take a look at it and hadn't digested it yet.
It is a pretty lengthy definition, and I think my response was something to the effect that there's plenty of concepts here that we could probably borrow in crafting our own definition, but there were also some areas of concern. So, and I wanted to get Mike's response on that as well as some others.
Okay, great. So that's a new post. We should all take a look at it, it sounds like, in preparation for additional discussion. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Next item is the uniformity in contracts group.
George here. I just wanted to ask about that point. I looked at the wiki, and there didn't seem to be any updated definition.
Yeah.
Unless it was just posted.
Yeah, sorry, I was on mute. Yeah, that's correct. Actually, I think that Mike just sent it to the definition working group, so that was the folks that you named earlier, Greg.
Okay.
If you like, I could post that to the list as a whole or post it to the wiki. The wiki probably sounds a little more appropriate.
Yeah, because my takeaway from the last meeting was that we were supposed to get notice of the changes, discuss it on the list, and then have it ready for this meeting. And it's kind of sad that it's, going to be another 2 weeks before we discuss it again.
Yeah, so it just got posted, so it does need to go up on the wiki where everyone can see it.
Okay, I'll work to get that definition posted to the wiki as well as I believe I'm the only one that has commented on it thus far, so I can post that to the wiki as well.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Anything else on cyber squatting then? Okay. Hearing none, we move on to uniformity in contracts. And Barry and his sub-team had a recent meeting and been doing a lot of work, so I'd like to turn things over to Barry.
Okay, thank you. I'll kind of be quick and brief about this. We met last Wednesday, there were five or six of us on the call. We had a pretty good discussion about the topic of uniformity of contracts prior to the call. I had kind of reread through some components out of our charter and tried to build kind of a prototype that would hopefully address some of the questions or action items out of that charter. I think in a short title of it, we're calling it a survey for lack of a better word right now, but in general it was an instrument for us to gauge on how well we can start to try to acquire information from the registrars and registries out there in the market to better understand, do they list abuse provisions in any of their contracts or terms of use agreements and those kinds of things, and regardless, what actions do they take against these types of abuses. So we spent the first half of the call kind of talking about this prototype survey. Bottom line, we realized that we weren't ready to move forward with building anything like that for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, this prototype was structured about the abuse types that we're defining within this working group, and we need to wait until that list has been finalized before we try constructing anything against that template, so to speak. The second aspect as well is that we're not 100% clear how we would get participation and understanding specifics as it relates to what actions are really taken out there. You know, is this something that we can approach the marketplace and, like, as a traditional survey format, maybe get 10 to 20% response, or do we work through going through the registrar constituencies and trying that avenue? So for the most part, we're kind of tabling the survey for the moment and we basically came to the consensus that we need to kind of do a little bit deeper dive in research. So the main action out of the group right now is we're taking a little bit deeper dive on the aspects of understanding the dispersion and variance within our contracts. Or not our contracts, but within registrant contracts and those terms of use, et cetera, and really get a better kind of understanding of what terms and provisions and language are being used out there. We're going to have we're basically going to start with the top 10 registrars or any publicly available type documents to better gauge what this dispersion and variance looks like. And we're basically going to be meeting every other week opposite of this team as kind of our schedule. But in our next session, we're going to take a look at what we found out of these top 10 registrars, first and foremost, and see if we're going down the right path. With the top 10, you know, are we finding that the dispersion and variance is so vast that we don't really need to bother going down further down the list of gathering some research, or should we take a little bit better direction? So that's basically where we stand. We talked a little bit about what our deliverables out of the sub-team would be, and for the most part, it's going to be a draft document that would be inclusion for the overall registration abuse policy report that would be going out as a conclusion of this working group. And basically, and what we'll include with that is what any of our research findings, any patterns or themes that we may have discovered, and some overarching recommendations. And of course, before we formally
publish anything to be included into that report, we'll definitely be sharing it with the overall working group as well, and make adjustments as necessary to gain that appropriate consensus. And then lastly, we just talked about how often we're going to meet. And so, like I said, we're basically going to leapfrog the working group sessions that we have and start meeting every other week. So nothing really tangible out of the session yet, nothing worthy of posting to the wiki. But by the conclusion of our next call, we should have something better to physically share with the group and move on from there. And James and Mikey, please add to anything if I may have forgot something.
This is Mikey. I just want to compliment Barry on doing a fabulous job as our fearless leader. And as you can tell from his summary, he's got us marching down a very clear path that I think we're all really comfortable with. He's doing a fabulous job.
Absolutely. 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 It's much appreciated.
Save it for when we're done. Thank you, though.
This is James. I just wanted to also thank Barry so far. I think that this effort has a lot of merit and a lot of good can come out of it. I did have a couple of hesitations, which we expressed on the call, especially with regard to asking registrars about internal procedures, which I don't think we're going to get a lot of participation on that. And then the other part being that any type of comparison or public ranking of registrar abuse practices could be a trepidatious topic to introduce. But other than that, I think that we're definitely on the right track. And I did have one question for you, Greg, as the chair. We have this group and we have the cyber squatting group, and I think just to head off potential questions down the road, if we could identify under what area of the charter these efforts fall. And just off the cuff, I would think that the cyber squatting working group falls under the definition section of the charter, and that the uniformity of contracts falls under the research and data collection area of the charter. But I'm just trying to anticipate some of the questions that might be asked down the road when these groups actually produce their output. So just want to put that on the table as well.
I think they're pretty explicitly covered. We're supposed to look in depth at each issue enough to talk about them and perhaps make recommendations to council. So that's what we're doing with cyber squatting. The charter also explicitly asks that we do research as necessary or as we deem necessary. And very explicitly asks us about looking into uniformity in contracts. So I don't see any particular problems.
I think we're in agreement on that, then.
Yeah, I think we're well within our remit.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so anybody have any additional questions or comments about the uniformity in contracts effort? Hearing none, we appreciate what you guys have worked up so far and look forward to additional iterations. So great work, guys. Next on the agenda is an update from Rod Rasmussen, who's been working on the malware and botnet control issue. So over to you, Rod.
Okay. I would say that some work has been done. Absolutely. Some time, but we've got I worked on updating the wiki page with at least trying to get a straw man for a description of what the issue is, and put some references to external documents and information that outline three of the major botnets that have used the technique of pre-registering domain names, not pre-registering domain names, pre-defining domain names that they would use in order to execute command and control or rendezvous or other means of allowing botnet masters to control their botnets. So that includes Clickr. That information has been updated there. That's about it so far, just getting some more background information and details and working on at least a little bit of a definition around the problem. Going forward, I'm not sure how we want to proceed on this. Do we need a group? Do we need just to flesh this out as a question? I'm not quite sure what the charter is, so to speak, if they're for a subgroup other than information on the table and how we're going to cover this. So back to you.
I had volunteered to help you with that one because I've dealt with Conficker. I guess we need to fill in that template, which would include the background, which you're taking a whack at right now with that material you just mentioned.
Is it me, or is it just me on my end, or did Greg just drop out there?
I think it's you on your end, Rod. You dropped out a little bit when you were talking.
Okay, yeah, I'm on a cell phone, and unfortunately, my provider, my carrier, is not all that great in my own house. So.
Okay, no problem. What we need to do is fill in that template that we're using for the wikis. So we're working on some background material right now. Another section we would need to work on somehow is what would be recommendations, if any, for example. So as long as we can fill in that template, we'll be fine. And that's our goal. So I don't know if there are any recommendations for action or anything else at this point, but we should consider that.
Filling out the templates, I think, fairly straightforward. There's a body of evidence or evidence and actions already out there that have been taken in response to these various botnets. So filling it out based on past history is fairly straightforward. And that's something I could probably get done in the next couple of weeks without having to have any formal committee. But that's just a matter, again, of getting information out there. There was, I think, a very cogent, I'd call it, a page worth of a document from the people at University of California, Santa Barbara, who used the rendezvous capability of Torpig to take over the Torpig botnet briefly. And actually they found terabytes and terabytes, no, I'm sorry, 70 gigabytes worth of personal stolen data as a result of that. That was kind of fun. It's an interesting paper. I've got that on the wiki as far as a link to it, but they have a very cogent description of the issues surrounding going after these domain names and either trying to pre-register or block registration, how that's an asymmetric problem. So I think that's well worth people's time to take a look at that, because it really helps, I think, enlighten the issues here from both the security standpoint and the policy standpoint. If thought it through pretty well. Definitely recommend that, and I'll work on fleshing the rest of that out. From there, I think the group can decide what various recommendations it wants to put forward, if any.
Brad, this is Mikey. Would you be comfortable throwing out some preliminary recommendations just as a draft, given the that you're so close to this?
Yeah, certainly. This has been fairly well discussed as far as different things that can be done.
Rod, you dropped out again.
Okay, I'm sorry. Did you? Let me try to watch.
Yeah, I'll
try. I'm sorry, Mikey. Were you talking about right now discussing that, or were you talking about putting it up on the wiki page?
No, I was talking as you're filling out the rest of that template. Don't be shy, I guess, about throwing some recommendations, at least as a draft, in there, because you're probably one of our best experts on that topic.
Yeah, no problem. I will do that.
Okay, George.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Rod whether the standard protocols take into account the involvement of law enforcement, because anything we recommend, we don't want to block off law enforcement's attempts to solve the problem. Like you said, one strategy might be to take over the botnet. If we decide to do a policy to reserve certain names, then that would thwart that strategy. So I just want to... there's ethical and legal issues involved, obviously.
Yeah, and there's both, and it's within the security community as well. And there's different camps there as to how involved you get with and without law enforcement involvement, et cetera. I do know there's been a specific proposal put forward to have a specific relationship with a single or set of registrars and law enforcement to enable them to be able to do some, kind of investigatory work as part of a formal process. And Conficker was a kind of a watershed event in bringing that forward. So there's certainly been some consideration and debate about it. I don't know that there's any particular issue or a particular recommendation that we can glom onto, but I'll try and get some more of that out as much as I can, at least, because there's some of that I'm privy to that's not really in the public eye.
Right, because there's issues with good Samaritans having good intentions that do things, but then you don't necessarily want everybody in the public to have a gun and have vigilante justice.
Right. Just from an even broader perspective, we deal with that. That's what my business has to deal with every day. We get we work for banks shutting down sites, and once in a while we have law enforcement say, "Don't touch that," and we're kind of caught in a. There's not a necessarily a legal leg for law enforcement to stand on when there's a server in Romania that is attacking a bank in Canada, but we try and work with them to. Helps the investigation while at the same time trying to curb the abuse. So it's tough. And, and creating a formal policy around it is even harder.
This is Mikey. But, I think that to the extent that you could hypothesize some useful policy that would make it easier for that kind of situation, that would be a great contribution.
George,
right.
Maybe the GAC could also get involved? Do we have any reps from the GAC on these work groups, or are they kind of just watching from the sidelines? The government.
The GAC usually doesn't participate in GNSO because GNSO is one is about governments, the other one's about the other groups. And I think by design they don't have crossover unless they want to collaborate on something.
So. I guess if we recommended something to ICANN might consult the GAC, or if the GNSO recommended something to ICANN might consult the GAC.
Okay. All right. Anything else on botnets and malware? Okay. Hearing none. The next topic on the list is front running which is on our list of proposed abuses. Near the top of the meeting, by the way, I sent the group a document which has a little snippet about the definition of front running. So if you have your mail available, please open that up. I'm also going to paste it into the chat window so you can see it. And I'm going to post two links and then some material from that. What this is there were two reports by the SAC about front running, and they came up with the definition. So that's what I've sent over to you for reference. And if you could take a few minutes to read that. Actually, we're getting up near the top of the hour. Why don't we take like a 5-minute lull so you can read that or take a break, and we'll start up the conversation in 5 minutes. Why don't we do that?
Sounds fine.
Okay, thanks. Okay, and we're back. Okay, has everyone had a chance to look at that ESSAC background? Or do you need more time?
I'm okay. This is Mikey.
Okay. I'm good too, George here.
Okay. So that's those are the two reports that the ESSAC published. And I can also give you some background about what's happened in the GNSO since then, which is very relevant for us. The ESSAC second report came out in January 2008, and one of the things it talks about is the network solutions implementation. And you can read it in the report, but basically network solutions was doing something on their site. If a potential registrant went to their site and did a lookup to see if a domain was available, network solutions would go ahead and register that domain. So, and then basically offer that domain to the person I forget if they're registering it under Network Solutions' name or how they were doing it. But basically, they would register the name for 4 days. And if the name was sold to the person who was interested in it, then it was given to them. And if the name was not sold, then Network Solutions would delete the name within the add grace period. And the name would be back in the pool of available names. I remember that Network Solutions went in front of the ESSAC the next month in February 2008 to talk about their implementation. That was at the ICANN Delhi meeting. What eventually happened is they stopped offering that implementation. And the GNSO started discussing the excess deletion fee. This came about through a PDP, and it became a formal policy earlier this year. Basically, what that consensus policy says is that if a registrar deletes more than, I think it's 50 names a month, in the add grace period, and that represents 10% or more of the domain creates they do, then they get charged extra. They basically get charged a fee for excess deletions. That was ostensibly to deal with domain tasting. However, it was also going to have an effect potentially on front running, because if a registrar is registering a lot of names and then throwing a lot of them back, they would get hit with that fee and it would be a deterrent. The GNSO, there was discussion at the council that they would look at the excess deletion numbers once they started becoming available. And I think those first ICANN reports from the registries are probably about due to be posted. So there was an action item that the council would take that up and look at it at some point. And I think that's where things are. So that was some related stuff that happened. So that's where we are, and we should open this topic up for discussion. So James?
Yeah, Greg, I just wanted to point out that while the topic thus far has been relative to registrars, that I think the real, the true threat from front-running comes from different types of spyware or malware, et cetera, that could be used to intercept that traffic, whether it's actually residing on the client machine or somewhere in between. So I just wanted to put that out as This is not necessarily a registrar exclusive issue.
Okay. Roland?
Yeah, I was just going to point out that front-running only is a problem if it is associated also with abuse. In other words, if you hold that domain up to ransom in some way. Now, you might hold it up to ransom only very slightly by saying, you can have this name at its list price, but if you register it through myself, not through any other registrar. Or, actually, if you warned potential registrants when they looked up a name, if you put a warning on the page and said, if you look this name up, we will register it and keep it safe for you, and you can come to us later and say, actually, I'd rather register that through a different company, and then we will let you do that, or whatever level of transparency is involved. So I think the process of front-running, certainly through registrars, I think should be fairly well understood, but you have to link that with some kind of abusive behaviour as well, anti-competitive almost behaviour as well.
Okay. George, his hand is up.
Yeah, this kind of reminds me of quantum physics. I don't know if people are familiar with Schrodinger's cat, where the act of observing something can alter the outcome. This is kind of what we have. The act of observing whether a domain name is available or not tips off people to register the name, and so it affects the state of the registration. And just to follow up on the previous speaker, it's definitely not just a registrar trust issue. It could be done at the registry level because registries are allowed to monitor the DNS zone traffic, and the latest contract revisions allow them to use that basically any way they want. So, you know, they could notice that, you know, xyz.com or whatever is getting a lot of extra traffic and it's unregistered. So they could preemptively register it. And this could be done, you know, just like the UNet plugins were doing the same thing. And ISPs can also, you know, monitor DNS traffic for invalid domain names and grab them. And I guess partially the registrars can mitigate the problem by, if they want to maintain a trust relationship with their clients through other contract or by technical countermeasures. For example, instead of using the check command to see whether a domain is registered or not, they could just, you know, sign up for the bulk zone file access, download the entire zone file, and do a local check. And then that doesn't, you know, that allows them to do the lookup in secret. And if the name is not in the zone file, you know, there's a 99% chance that it's available, assuming the domain wasn't registered in the past day, or that domain you know, might be registered but have no name servers for some reason.
Okay. So. Anything else you'd like to add? If not, we'll
no, that's, I'm done.
Okay, we'll move on to Jeff Newman.
Yeah, it's just a question. We're still talking about, and the definitions by the SEC is only when the queries are coming from an individual user, right? I mean, like, we're not, it sounded like the last, George, I mean, it sounded like you were going a little bit broader to that as far as all of traffic data as opposed to just when an individual user is checking the availability. I just want to verify that we're...
Well, that user could check availability several ways. For example, instead of going to a registrar, they could type in www.blahblahblah.info, and they notice it's not registered. So, but if a registry... you know, wanted to, they could preemptively register that domain name because you know, it got one lookup. You know, well, they could obviously choose the threshold.
Right, but are you saying that's abuse?
Well, some people might consider that front-running. I'm not necessarily sure that that's an abuse. Well, the registry in that sense definitely has a competitive advantage because they have insider knowledge that nobody else has access to. I guess the question is, are all kinds of unequal levels of information, you know, asymmetric information, are all of those considered to be bad? Because, you know, in the real world, you know, people do have different levels of access to information. You know, my, you know, more thorough analysis of IBM, you know, using all publicly available information might make me, you know, be a better stock picker. But I guess this goes back to trust, you know. Are the registries implicitly trusted to not use certain kinds of data in certain kinds of ways? That's, I guess, a policy question.
I mean, there is a provision about registries warehousing names, right? So the registry is prevented from warehousing names, you know. So I guess that's
well, they're
kind of in the registry agreements as well.
They're allowed to use that data, though. So the question is, let's say they sell that data to somebody, and then that somebody else registers the name. Is that bad, good, who knows? Because the thing is, there could be a good case for allowing that data to be used. For example, people were talking about having an instantaneous, you know, Nielsen-type rating system, you know, where you see the DNS traffic to a certain site, you know, spike. You can kind of have, like, a real-time ratings, which, you know, might be a very good, you know, value-added service for the DNS. But if you're giving the entire data set, including the invalid domains that don't exist, then that might be an issue. I'm not, you know, taking a position. I'm just, you know, kind of laying out what some of the issues are.
Yeah, I'm not sure I see that as related to registration abuse. But that's my own opinion, I guess.
Well, I guess the abuse in the views of some people might be that, you know, they wanted that domain and, you know, you took it from them. You know, people get accused of this all the time, you know. You've got a good domain, I want it. That's abuse.
I understand there's definitely a difference between someone searching for a domain through a Whois lookup or other ways, but I see a big difference between that and just ordinary traffic data. But yeah, you know, I see checking the avail. Well, never mind. I don't see that as kind of a registration abuse argument.
Anything else, Jeff and George?
Oh, no, I've said my piece.
Okay. I see James's hand raised.
Yeah, just real quickly, and I think this is touching on the theme that George and Jeff are discussing, is in a first-come, first-serve environment, are efforts for folks to gain advantage or even game those processes considered abuse? I think that's just... That's the question on the table. Am I stating that correctly, guys? Or?
Yeah, I think, George, I agree with you. I guess the question is, where do you draw the line on how to achieve superior information? Some players, you know, have a position of trust, and others, or not a position of trust, but a superior ability to access certain data just because of their position. And that position might be due to ICANN contract. And so... is that something that you want to create a policy on?
Yeah, but we're certainly not discussing different types of innovative ways, for example, to be more efficient or more predictive, or I'm having difficulty thinking up a concrete example of what I'm describing, but, you know, in a first-come, first-serve environment, folks are going to naturally want to do everything they can to gain an advantage, and some of that may be above board and some of it may not.
Yeah, I think part of it might be education on the part of registrants, that they need to be a little bit more paranoid about how they actually determine whether a domain name is available, and maybe that might be the appropriate course, that, you know, they should be like me, that, you know, I only do my Whois lookups at the registry level. I don't trust any of the registrars. And if the domain name is, you know, available, I'll grab it immediately. Like, they shouldn't take 2 weeks to decide.
Sure. And for example, if you go to you know, GoDaddy's front of site and type in some kind of strange thing for a domain search, I think it kicks you over to a SSL secured site just to prevent that request from being intercepted or eavesdropped by any sort of intermediary. So I think that, you know, do registrants notice that we do that? I don't know.
So it sounds like you're touching upon the trust relationship that may exist between parties. Do people, in other words, do people expect that the information they input into a service or something is going to get used in a certain way?
Oh, that's exactly it. Like the trust relationship could be, you know, not even involving registrars. It could be, you know, a friend of mine calls me up and asks whether a domain name is available, and I see it's available and I grab it, you know, that trust relationship between my friend and me could be violated. And it, they would consider that front running because I have the superior knowledge and took advantage of it. Whether we want to create a policy on that, that might be a few steps removed from what we can do.
Okay. Anyone else? No?
Greg, this is Rod. Sorry, I'm on the road at this point, so I can't raise my hand. There's a couple of trust relationships here as well that are kind of interesting in this respect, in that you have ISPs involved looking at DNS traffic inquiries and things like that now that could be involved in this. And you actually get an interesting crossover with the botnet issue, because botnets are looking for domain names that aren't necessarily registered. So you get lots of traffic looking for that in various flavors. So you start to, once you get beyond the the classical definition of front running, if you will, where you had a lookup at a registrar for availability, you get into a lot of different kinds of interesting discussions about who has data about what you're trying to do and may take advantage of it.
Okay. So it sounds like it's fairly complicated. Among others, James and Rod and George have mentioned a number of parties who could potentially be involved: registrars, registries, someone managing spyware, malware, ISPs, etc. Would someone like to take the lead on this issue? Is it something that, you know, we want to explore as an abuse topic? James?
Yeah, you thought I was volunteering, didn't you? I actually have a question, Greg. Sorry. Should we first perhaps define the harm of this? And I understand there's an anti-competitive aspect. There's a potential violation of implicit trust of a trusted party. But, you know, I think maybe getting a I can't scroll up, but I see that one column, I think, says who it's harming, and whether that be registrants or consumers, or if we could help put some structure around this particular type of abuse, that perhaps we could work better to define all of its different variations.
Exactly. So I'm asking if there are any volunteers to put some structure around this. Sounds like there's interest in the topic, but who wants to step up? Bueller? Okay. Not seeing any hands up. Does that mean there's no interest in the topic, or just no one is going to be able to take it on?
I don't know. Do we really need to take it on as a separate topic, Greg? It's Mike.
Mike Rodenbaugh. I'm sorry. We didn't know you joined.
I've been on for a while. Sorry. I'm just curious. I mean, do we need to break it out with a separate group as a separate topic, or is this something we can put in the report and work from there? Just as sort of a summary of what we've talked about today, and just leave it at that for now.
What we need to do is, we do need to write, so if we're going to put it in the report, we need somebody to write some material. So whether that's an individual or a group, whatever, but we need a volunteer to do it. We need somebody to write something down at least to give the rest of the group something to react to.
Well, I think you started that, and we've talked about it on the call today. I think perhaps someone from staff could put a summary together, a couple of paragraphs.
My preference is to not have staff write sections of the report. I think that's up to the working group members. That's my first preference.
Okay, well, I disagree with that. I mean, and it's going to take us a lot longer to write a report if you're expecting a bunch of different people to write different sections.
Well, one of the sections has to be recommendations, if any. Staff should not be writing that section.
I would agree with that. Unless we give them specific direction on a call, you know, this is what we want in the section, please do a first draft. I think that's perfectly acceptable.
Okay. All right, so I'm not hearing anybody volunteer. I'm going to throw this one up to the list since we have some members who are not with us today. So I'm going to ask for volunteers on the list. See if anybody takes a bite. Okay. All right, we're at about 21 past, so we have just a few more minutes on the call.
George here. I looked at my schedule. I think I can do it.
You want to take it, George?
Yeah, I don't think it'll be too hard. I think we just take the transcript of today's meeting and add a few points to it. I'm not going to take a recommendation, but I think we can at least set out what the things are.
Okay. Thank you, George.
No problem.
Okay. So last topic before we close is scheduling. We have two items to talk about. One is the next few calls. We have a call 2 weeks from today, which is the 17th, and then we have a call on the 31st, the last day of August. I may not make that call, by the way. I'll be on vacation. Does everybody want to schedule both of those meetings, or are there going to are there any schedule conflicts that anyone has that are really of concern to you?
What are the dates again, Greg?
2 weeks from today, the 17th, and then 2 weeks after that, which would be August 31st. And then, by the way, the next Monday, September 7th, is Labor Day in the U.S. We would have a third meeting. The next meeting would be September 14th, Monday. So those would be our next meetings unless there are some significant conflicts of schedule. So I'm not hearing any particular schedule problems. So let's go ahead and stick to the regular schedule. The other question is a general question, which is we have to occasionally give the council an update as to our progress. We have to think a little bit about our goals that we're going to shoot for issuing an initial report. Now, that's always a tricky thing because we haven't worked our way through our entire list of issues yet, and then we also have to write material and we have to finalize it, which is also a process. The next ICANN meeting is October 25th through 30th in Seoul, South Korea. And then the next meeting after that, by the way, is March 7th through 12th, 2010 in Nairobi, Kenya. Now, does anyone feel it's reasonable to shoot for an initial report to be delivered by late October?
It would be an admirable goal.
Is it realistic?
I think we could at least have a draft of all of the different types of harms. That certainly is realistic.
So you're saying a list of the abuse topics that we're delving into?
Yes. I don't think it's realistic to think that we'll be done with the recommendations and all with any recommendations and further research efforts by then.
Yeah. James?
Just real quickly, if we have an initial report like that, does it go out for comment, and are we following the same sort of roadmap as a traditional or formal PDP, or what comes after the initial report?
At our initial meetings, we did decide that we would follow the standard working group progression, which means we would issue an initial report. It gets sent to council, and then there would be a public comment period.
But that's okay. We don't have to follow that process with an initial report. If it's just a partial report, we just want to get something for example, the council to talk about, and perhaps something for the community to look at. It doesn't have to be put out for an official public comment period. It can just be sent around to the constituencies.
Well,
and what I'm trying to say is it's up to us. We have a lot of flexibility. This is not a formal PDP task force under the bylaws, so we have a lot of flexibility.
That would be a reversal of what we decided in our first couple of meetings.
Okay, well, I'm not necessarily trying to reverse anything. I'm just... we have to be flexible, though. I think it would be valuable to have something in writing by the SOL meeting, given that we've been, when did we start this group? It seems like 2 or 3 months ago now. It'll be 6-7 months. It would be about time we put something on paper before that meeting.
George?
Well, I think it hasn't hurt to get the input from the public in addition to the constituencies, because not everybody that is interested in this topic is involved in constituencies. Like, I think even some members in this work group. So the broader the distribution, the better.
That's fine. I don't, it doesn't matter to me how broadly it goes. I just think we should have something to go.
Other comments, please? Okay. Hearing none. I'm also going to put this topic on the agenda for the next meeting. Going to want to pick up additional members. We've heard from James, Mike, and George thus far. Okay. All right. It is, according to my clock, 1:30, so that's our time to close. Thanks again to everybody. We knocked off an additional topic today. Thank you, George, for putting some material together for the front-running topic. And we will continue discussion on the list, and we will have our regularly scheduled meeting 2 weeks from today. Does anyone have any last thoughts before we sign off? Nope. Okay. Well, again, thanks, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Greg. Good work.